Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, welcome back to the Coral Courts Radio Hour, a presentation of Deep Dish Radio. I'm Tim Powers, and this is my personal mixtape to you. You know, every now and then I put together a set list, a playlist, or a friend of mine comes in with a set list and playlist of music that is important to them. Not always the definitive list of music, but certainly things that they enjoy. And today is a little bit different and no exception at the same time. Today, I put together a list of 9 cuts, and going through them with me today is my dear friend, author Brad Schreiber. Hi, Brad.
Hello. We have turned the tables, and now you control the horizontal, you control the vertical.
It's true.
That's right. And I get to interrogate young Tim Powers about the reasons he has chosen these very unusual songs.
Yeah, and man, I'll tell you, putting together this list, you know, I had probably 100 songs that I would love to play, but if I put them all together, it really shows that I have a horrible fear of abandonment. So I thought, all right, I'm going to mix them up.
Well, it's a good thing you didn't say anything about it, so your audience won't know.
Yeah, that's true. So thank you for listening. Thank you for hearing me. All I ever wanted was just to be heard. Thank you so much. In fact, speaking of which, we've gotten some great reviews on iTunes. I'd like to thank John for leaving one on iTunes about how well curated we are. I'd like to thank Kathy for listening and saying good things about Brad and me and some
Thank
of the episodes
you.
That we've
you know,
done.
We're nothing if not psychotically eclectic. But what's really going to be exciting for me is, you know, in our previous shows, I've always brought in the music and then Tim would bring in, you know, perhaps one song. So now I'm getting an understanding of not only his appreciation of my music, quote unquote, my music, but where he came from, how he grew up, because what you listen to isn't just sonically what interests you, it's what themes move you in terms of lyrics,
right?
What feelings, so what eras of music speak to you stronger than others. So I actually get to know more about you through this process.
Well, and that is why I put the show together.
I thought I knew who you were. Who are you?
Well, you kind of do. You know some stuff. So, you know, let's start with a cut that I discovered years and years ago. Just I heard it on what used to be called an AOR station, an album-oriented freeform rock and roll station, where the jocks used to be able to play whatever they wanted. And it was a station in St. Louis. The call letters were WMRY. It was a low-power frequency that was owned by the Convent of Our Lady of the Snows on the Illinois side of the St. Louis community, and they owned a transmitter. They owned a broadcast transmitter, and I don't know the story behind it. Probably somebody like Ron Stevens does. And one day, they flipped the format. It used to just be like a low-power Catholic radio station, and somebody talked them into making money and playing some music, and they let the jocks play whatever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
God love you, Mark Close, for just being awesome. And
That's amazing. What a transition.
Yeah. And it was freeform, and it was beautiful radio for a good long time. And the jocks had complete control of whatever they wanted. And for me, you know, I was 17, 18 at the time, and listened religiously. Like the
no
minute,
pun intended.
The minute that class bell rang, You know, I would find a radio and I would be tuned in until I couldn't stay awake anymore. And loved it. There were, you know, I'm blessed with growing up with some great radio.
KMRY.
WMRY.
Oh, sorry. WMRY. W. Mary.
Yes.
The voice of Mary Magdalene.
The voice of Mary. WMRY from Our Lady of the Snows. Yeah. It's a W because the transmitter was on the Illinois side. And as you probably know, the call letters for radio and television stations begin with W, east of the Mississippi
River,
and K, west of the Mississippi,
right,
which is why cities like St. Louis have W's and
but
K's.
But you know how rare it is that a convent radio station would allow anyone to play rock and roll? Unless you played God Gave Rock and Roll to Me constantly. You know? I can't believe that's so fantastic.
Actually, Argent's God Gave Rock and Roll to You was almost on the list because it was such a great song. And I just love Rod Argent.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I have a very vivid memory of even the clock radio that this song came to me through. Why don't we just play it and then I'll tell you the story. But it's a straight ahead rock and roll.
You might want to tell
records.
Them the name of the band and the song title.
Out of Canada, the band is called Brave Belt.
Brave Belt.
The cut is called Another Way Out.
Another way out.
good to the very last note.
Isn't it, though? I let it play all the way down to that fade because, like, right at the end, Randy Bachman just throws in that last little lick. You know, usually song's over, the musicians are lighting a cigarette and leaving the studio. But during the fade, Randy's like, nuh-uh, one more. Mm-hmm. So that's Randy Bachman, who had just broken up the Guess Who. And those vocals should sound familiar because it's also Chad Allen from the Guess Who. But the band is called Brave Belt, and it was the transition band. They only put out two albums between the Guess Who and Bachman Turner Overdrive. Mm-hmm. And you hear little elements of Randy's additions to the very large Guess Who body of work, but you also hear what Bachman Turner Overdrive will be the minute Randy gets his distortion pedal.
Yeah, and at the same time, you're hearing what Chad Allen added vocally to the Guess Who.
Yeah.
You know, because Burton Cummings was such a present and very strong personality as well as voice.
Yeah.
That you realize, hey, this guy was really an important part of that sound. I don't know if he wrote a lot of the songs for the Guess Who, but he was a very important part of the vocal sound of the group. And it's kind of nice to see him in another venue or with another band.
Yep. And I love those guitars, man. And there's got to be probably 5-6 guitars deep in there. And if it isn't, it sure sounds like it. You know, there's that heavy rhythm. You know, I don't know the chord.
It's very syncopated, by the way. It grabs you right off. You know, it's a great idea for songwriting where the start of the song is powerful, syncopated guitar work, you know, with drums. And it creates an expectation in the listener.
And the drums are mixed so well because, I mean, that drummer pulls a Ringo Starr. You don't hear it because it's mixed so well. But what I mean by that, when he pulls a Ringo Starr, is he's really on that crash cymbal all the way through it. And it's mixed in perfectly so that it doesn't overrule, like, you know, a lot of the Beatles' first two albums are almost overruled by that crash cymbal. And I love the mix on this. I love the anger in the lyrics of someone who is obviously a shit and gets away with it. Mm-hmm. You know, you found yourself another way out. Way to go. You know,
right.
You want all this sympathy, but as soon as the chips are down, you're out.
Right.
And I love that. And it's just a solid rock and roll hook, you know, and I just love this record. Now, this is probably the first time you've ever experienced this record.
I have never heard this. And I instantly gravitated toward it. You know, you and I will trade music with each other and you'll respond really strongly to certain things over others.
Yeah.
The hook is just instantaneous. You don't always experience it. Sometimes you have to wait for a while to hear a song, or there's even a middle section. You go, oh, I really like that. Or I really like the chorus. Boom, this has got you. Yeah. One of the other things I like about this song is normally my brain gets bored when you repeat things. It's like, okay, you've said it over and over again. Right. I want different lyrics.
Right.
In this song, Another Way Out and repeating it kind of works on you. It's the echo of, here, you're doing the same thing over and over again. We're getting sick of it. You know, aren't you sick of doing the same thing over and over
again?
It has a certain message, so you don't mind. And the vocals are processed really beautifully.
Yeah, they are.
They're not like over the top, and they're not totally dominant by one single voice. And, you know, it's that echo effect. I don't mean literally echo, 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 echo. I mean hearing something over and over again, and it has a power rather than boring you. It makes its point.
Yeah, and you get the impression that the subject of the song, the person about whom the song is written, has reached that last straw. You know, you've done this enough.
Right.
You've done this enough. Yeah, and I think that's why it starts with another.
Yeah, remember, you know, when you and I on a previous show listened to Bruce Springsteen? I chose a Meeting Across the River, and we talked about the story of the song is this is their last shot, and it's probably going to go wrong, and something very bad is going to happen. That feeling of inevitability.
Yeah.
So that's kind of something that's going on, I think, with this band and this song. you know, is you found another way out, but how long can you do that is the implication. And I really like that.
Yeah. It seethes with a lot of Randy's anger at Burton that later comes out in one of my favorite, actually my very favorite BTO song called Hey You, which did not make the list, but I love that song so much.
So tell me as well as your listeners, why is Randy Bachman angry at Burton Cummings?
Well, historically they've gone back and forth, but there have been, some legal cases
and
forth about ownership and about, you know, lapsed copyrights and Burton picking up things that are legitimately Randy's. And, you know, it's deep inside baseball, but it made for an awesome song. So if you ever get a chance to listen to Hey You by Bachman Turner Overdrive, just forget that it's the Taking Care of Business guys. And it's a rocking little two minutes and 40 seconds.
Again, before we go to the next song, again, it's the personal experience of a band, bad experience leading to great art.
Yeah.
The Who, Did You Steal My Money? They write
from last episode, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, from our last episode. They get ripped off, but then they write a song, not about The Who personally getting ripped off, but about people who've been violated. And I think it's one of their great lesser-known songs, and it came out of Bad Mojo.
Right. Or the White Album, for example, which people regard as the artistic high point of the Beatles as individual songwriters, as opposed to Sgt. Pepper, which is the combined effort of the band and George Martin. People look at the White Album as a fine piece of art, but it's largely, there are exceptions, but largely based on personal experience. All of those songs are written from, especially John's songs, are written from a very personal, introspective, painful point of view. And this is no exception, except that it's in a short little rock and roll song.
So message to bands out there, even if you're about to break apart, that might be the moment where you do your best art. You never know.
The next song.
Yeah. So what about The Cheater? I've heard this song before, but not by this artist.
You've never heard the Bob Coop? I didn't know there was another version other than Bob Coopin's version.
Maybe I'm wrong. Wasn't there a black R&B group that did The Cheater?
Perhaps. We'll have to look into that. This is, you know, I grew up in St. Louis, and Coopin was a local band. And it was, from my understanding, during the mid to late 60s, It was Coopin's band that you went to go see, right? In barring a traveling band, this was the local band that would do covers, and they were, you know, that's where all the cool kids went, and this was their only hit. And to the best of my knowledge, it was a regional hit. I don't know that it got airplay outside of St. Louis.
I've imagined weirder things before. I might be making it up, but when will you listen to it? You can go check and see.
Yeah.
And it also reminds me of another hit that we're going to talk about on the other side that is also thematically linked, believe it or not, to the idea of The Cheater.
Right on. So... St. Louis's adult rock classic, 630 KXOK. Here's Bob Coopin and The Cheater.
Some more now. When he's out betraying, you hear people saying, look out for the cheater, make way for the fool-hearted clown. Look out for the cheater, he's gonna build you up just to let you down. That
he'll find a girl who knows all about him. She's gonna break his every heart and go on without him.
And you'll hear thereafter, above all the laughter, tough love for the cheater, too bad for the fool-hearted clown, tough break for the cheater, who used to build you up just to let you down. Tough love for the cheater, too bad for the fool-hearted clown, tough break for the cheater, who used to build you up just to let you down.
So Bob Kubin and the Inmen, right, with a song that really ought to be called, Hey, Listen to My Ike Turner Impression, The Cheater. And I found, okay, so it peaked at number one in Australia, mm-hmm. hit the Billboard Hot 100. Kubin never had another hit. And the story of the singer, Walter Scott, is the subject for another show.
But this was important to you because it's a St. Louis phenomenon.
It's a St. Louis phenomenon, and it's just this cool little record, right? That was a regional, like the last regional hit that I really know of. That outside St. Louis, not a lot of people know.
So, am I crazy, or is this what I heard on AM radio and perhaps FM radio as well in the San Francisco Bay Area when I was growing up? And there is no other version.
I can't find another version.
So I literally heard Bob Kubin. I heard this song and I thought, oh, I like when they hit that upper register.
Yeah, right.
You know, the intensity of it.
Yeah.
And I like fool-hearted clown. I like that phrase. You know, it just was different. Then they bring in the horns at the end. I heard this song when I was a kid, Tim, and it just, look, is a compliment. It sounds so classic that it sounds like three or four R&B groups might have done it.
Right.
That's a compliment to Kubin.
And, I mean, you can tell Kubin's a drummer because the drumming in it is really good.
It's very present as
and
well.
And Walter Scott, you know, sounds a little bit like movie Elvis, you know, mid-60s movie Elvis, you know? Uh-huh.
That's funny.
I mean, there's a lot going on in this record. The horns and everything are mixed, yeah. And I deliberately chose to play the stereo version so that if you're listening in headphones,
yeah.
On your right-hand side are those horns. You know, mm-hmm. like you're standing in the middle of the room, and it's really, you know, you would think a record like this would be kind of muddy and mixed for AM radio. It's surprisingly clear mm-hmm. for a Get It Done Yesterday knockoff kind of single. And Kubin never had another hit after this.
You know, I was going to say another aspect of this is you're from St. Louis, and
yes.
this was a local act, and you feel a certain amount of pride, as you should. So the same thing happened to me when I was living in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And in the 60s.
Were there rock and roll bands in the 60s in the Bay Area?
There were a couple. Okay. Not all of them were good, by the way. But some of them played at my high school rec. I mean,
okay.
Santana. You might have heard of them. They played at my high school.
I've heard of them, yeah.
You know, a number of other pretty well. Cold Blood, Lydia
really?
Pence. She played at our high school, Burlingame High School.
Right.
So, you know, it was nice to be alive at a time when those kinds of bands were coming up. But here's something even more personal to me.
What's that?
There was a group called The Vegetables that then became a group called The Mojo Men. And they did an old folky tune called Sit Down, I Think I Love You.
Right. Springfield did, too.
Yes. And it did very well. Well, I lived in a town called Foster City in San Mateo County.
Right.
And on our street, on Polynesia Drive, some of the members of the Vegetables,
no way.
We could walk by their garage. They were literally a garage
Vegetables
band.
With a J, right?
Yeah, with a J.
Yes.
Would rehearse their music. And the way we knew it was them is they would rehearse Sit Down, I Think I Love You. And it was note for note exactly what would wind up being played on the air. And we just thought, oh, that's so cool. There's like a not very well-known but really cool jangle pop San Francisco 60s group that lives on our street.
So what you're saying is the local rock group down the street was trying hard to learn its song.
That's right. And they were quite lovely. And Jan Ashton was the name of the lead singer.
Yeah.
She had, you know, changed her name because it sounded more British that way. But they were quite lovely. So, yes, I feel a certain pride with the bands that played in my high school, even though I didn't go to the rec dances. You know, I did wind up, you know, performing at Winterland with Carlos Santana, my comedy group, and the Vegetables with a J lived on my street in Foster City.
That's
so
pretty
cool. Like you and Bob Kuban, I feel certain pride.
We're going to come back to St. Louis in a couple of songs, but the next one is a band out of Chicago. And I got to thank my my uncle or former uncle, I don't know, Angelo Eppolito of Chicago, Illinois. Thank you very much for hipping me to this band. I was an early teen, and Angelo we sat around one night just playing records. Mm-hmm. And he gave me this cassette, and he's like, you need to hear just stuff. And it was stuff that he just taped off WLS-FM when Steve and Gary were the morning guys for WLS-FM. And he'd grab some songs that he loved.
WLS-FM is
in Chicago.
Okay.
And he just gave me a cassette. And it was like really weird, you know, far out AOR stuff from the glory days of freeform radio. And, you know, some of it was like the New York Rock and Roll Ensemble. Some of it was, you know, deep cuts from bands you've heard. And then this Chicago band called The Cry and Shames, which had a minor hit with a song called Sugar and Spice, which is kind of bubblegummy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shows up on anthologies here and there. And they had an album called Scratch the Sky, which I bought because this song was on it. It's a cover of the old Carole King, right? Who wrote Up on the Roof?
Up on the Roof, and many other people covered it very nicely.
But Carole King, I believe, I think Goffin and King wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a really great version, which starts off kind of folky and then just builds to this beautiful production. Right. And it creates this awesome scene in front of you, which just starts when you listen to it, starts off single voice by itself, just isolated on the roof. And then you kind of watch the universe expand around that roof. And sonically, it just paints the entire universe around you. And it's just a beautiful thing. And then transitions into a completely different song and then fades. And it's for being a 17-year-old kid who wanted isolation but also wanted to be part of the world, and your brain you know, follows all kinds of different paths as you try and sort your life out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot of what that's like.
So this is Goffin and King from a very classic song, Up on the Roof, done by The Crying Shames.
On the Choral Courts Radio Hour, right here, right now.
When this world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face, I climb right up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space.
I go up where the air is fresh and sweet. share it all with me. Let me tell you now.
When I come home feeling tired and beat, I go up where the air is fresh and sweet. I get away from the hustle and crowd and all the rat race noise down in the street. Upon the roof, upon the roof.
Didn't it seem right to walk along the sand last night and to gaze out at the night through your window?
Just the way things are can be reflected in a star, and you don't stop to think we could be that we're in love, could be we're in love. To walk along the sand, you don't have to understand what the world is really like outside your window. And didn't it seem right to walk along the sand last night and not stop to think we could be that we're in love, could be we're in love.
Didn't it seem right to walk along the sand last night and to gaze out at the night through your window? Could be we're in love.
It could be the end of the song.
Could be the end of the song.
It could be we're in love.
So that is, I love that version so much of Up on the Roof. And then when it goes into the second cut, It Could Be We're in Love. Is just, I mean, it's not great art, but it's great rock and roll.
It's very unpredictable. Just let's, you know, my take on just the Up on the Roof.
Yeah.
It's taking more than one tempo. It's really nice vocal arranging. It's not an insult to compare them to a group like The Association, which really had these soaring vocals.
Yeah.
And one of the net effects of doing a song like Up on the Roof and exploring the sound of the voices is the sense that you're going up to the roof of the building and that the sounds are changing as you get to the top. And your relationship, because the song is talking about getting away. But like you say, and you said very poignantly, you're a young guy and you're like, I need my space, but I still want to feel connected. And the song really is about that. And the engineering The Crying Shames version is also about that.
Isn't it astounding? I mean, you're right. The vocal arrangement got me from the get-go. And it wasn't, you know, I didn't appreciate the Beach Boys until my 30s. I got to be honest. I knew the hits, right?
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere in my late 20s, early 30s, I got a hold of the Pet Sounds box set with with just the vocal tracks isolated.
And I went,
holy moly, this is amazing, right?
Yeah.
And it was at that point that I started paying attention to vocal bands like the Mamas and Papas and Associations and Crying Shames and hearing things like this for the first time. And, I mean, I had loved this song for years before that, but the harmonies just still grab me, you know, 25 years later. And the instrumentation is fantastic. For all I know, it could be Chicago session musicians. It could be the Crying Shames themselves. I don't know. But once those horns kick in, man.
Yeah.
This becomes a kicking little record.
There's one problem only with the Crying Shames, and you know what it is.
The fact that they dropped the G in the gerund in
their name. C-R-Y-A-N.
Yeah.
Misspelled it. Sorry.
Well, you know, popular for the time.
If that's the only thing wrong with them, then they're doing very well. It's a group I wasn't familiar with, so I'm glad you shared it with me, and in many ways, all the other groups who covered Up on the Roof, you know, same emphasis.
Yeah.
Didn't get that soaring quality, didn't go as far in the vocal arrangements. It's a terrific version.
There are good versions out there. None of them are done by James Taylor. And, I mean, you compare that with this, and it's transcendent.
It really is.
It's just a good, fun, you know,
it's a suite of music, record. Really, if you think about it.
Yeah.
You know, the way the songs go together, it's a suite. So speaking of great voices, I happen to know that you have a soft spot for the Turtles.
Oh, I do.
You know, Howard Kalin and Mark Volman, and so do I. Not only what they did with the Turtles, but of course, when they were with Frank Zappa.
Yes.
They have songs where I am astounded by the quality of the blend of their voices. They do a song called Hot. And it's a very cheesy, overly sexed, Frank Zappa-esque kind of song about we're stars and we're getting girls hot.
Right.
But if that doesn't bother you, and hopefully it doesn't, their voices are astounding together. And so now you have chosen a song that I didn't know about called Love in the City.
Yeah, it's a deep album cut. It's called Love in the City. And I discovered it on a Rhino anthology in my late teens. Rhino at the time was the re-release label for all of the Turtles. And if you know the Turtles hits, you know Happy Together. And, you know, everybody knows that song. Well, there were a handful of albums around that single of varying quality and varying production. And this cut, Love in the City, is just, it's very similar in its vocal, in its complex vocal arrangement to what you just heard with the Crying Shames. It's a fun, kind of cynical rock and roll song, about love where, you know, everything pretty much sucks except when I get to my girl and I can hold her. And then everything's all right, and she's awesome.
Right.
And the release of joy that comes at the coda of this song and the arrangement of the vocals as they progress through the coda and the fade has knocked me out since the first time I've heard it. And here I am, you know, middle-aged man, still transfixed by the vocals of
you're middle aged. I don't see any gray hair, man. You look great,
dude. It's amazing what you can
you
buy
look
at Walgreens.
Fantastic for radio. Let me tell you, oldest and cruelest joke in existence,
indeed, and still works. So, without further ado or a don't, here's one of my favorite rock and roll bands of all time. I could talk about them all day and probably will. Here's the Turtles, Love in the City, Deep Dish, Coral Courts.
Good, so good.
1969, off the album Turtle Soup on White Whale Records, The Turtles, Love in the City. And yeah, the hair on my arms is standing again, which is always a good sign that that it's a damn good record. And I love it. There's a lot in there. The producer of that album, by the way,
yeah,
Ray Davies.
Oh, really?
Yep.
The Kinks.
The last Turtle studio album before the breakup of the band. Love in the City charted at number 91. Didn't really make it that high, but still, you know, broke the top 100. And that drumming, doesn't that drumming just grab you,
yes,
man?
Yes, it's very propulsive. Now, I want to pose something to you.
Hit me.
Do you see the connection between your choices of Crying Shame's Up on the Roof and the Turtles' Love in the City? Because we've kind of talked, and there is actually a connection in terms of the sonic quality of the songs and the themes of being in physical space. Okay.
Tell me more.
Up on the roof and love in the city and being within a large space. So the production has kind of vocal effects,
right,
that are a little distant and a little echoey that suggests space. So you're up on the roof of a building or you're within a city. And, you know, obviously the Turtles have songs where, you know, those guys' vocals are much more present.
Yeah.
But there's something about this that's almost wall of sound.
Yes.
That no, we're going to mix the horns in and the vocals are going to be down a little bit. You're going to hear them, but it's going to be an interesting, and I don't mean this in a detrimental way, in a wash of sound.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that's purely intentional. There's a, in that coda that I love so much, if you listen very carefully, there's a trumpet, like Hugh Masekela, super high trumpet, you know, coming through, kind of piercing those vocals, right, with a single note that the guys have to stop and staccato with their vocals,
right,
and it ties the whole thing together.
Yeah, they're choosing moments to mix in other things just for a moment, it, almost as if, did I hear that? It almost sound, was that a mellotron? Was that an organ? You know, that sort of effect, and it's really intriguing because, you know, if you do it. If you do it at a different time, it's happy together. But this is
that's an excellent point.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. That's a great, great song. But the way that it's engineered and produced is very different from this. And it's really great to kind of experience it and say, those are the same two voices and same two guys whose abilities vocally have always taken me. But wow, this is a different approach.
Yeah, this is one of
the... And it's spatial. You get what I'm saying to you?
Yes.
It's giving you a different sense of space in terms of what the song is about. And I think that's kind of interesting.
It's fascinating. Thank you for that insight.
You didn't know. You see, you don't know your own mind. You need me to tell you what you're thinking. That's what you're thinking.
What an interesting segue into our next cut.
Well, I'll tell you exactly why you picked the next cut, even though I am probably wrong. This next cut to me is very poetic, and a lot of lyrics to me are very straight ahead, especially love lyrics, blues lyrics. This is, I'm going to ask you about this band because I don't know much about Mama's Pride, but this is a blues rock band that I'm not familiar with, but, you know, talk a bit about the lyrics, which aren't straight ahead in terms of talking about sadness and emotion. They're very poetic and they're a little bit off kilter. I wonder if that interested you or if there was something else that
no question you. This is the signature song by a St. Louis band called Mama's Pride, and you know, they put out a handful of albums. I've spoken with Pat Liston, the guy that wrote this song, and he said he wrote it while waiting for a bus in Studio City, realizing that he was out of money and all alone.
Mm.
And I, at the time that we had this conversation, I actually lived in Studio City. And I have been fascinated by this song since I heard it. It is a powerful, powerful broken heart song where everything in it is off kilter. Everything in it is broken. Everything in it is sad. But it is a rockin' song. If you grab nothing out of it, the bass line throughout is something that you can hold on to, even if you can't relate to it. but the lyrics are incredibly poetic and encapsulate what it's like to have an unexpectedly broken heart. And I've experienced that, I'm not gonna lie.
And to be broke while you have a broken heart, apparently.
Even worse. So
ain't got no woman and ain't got no money.
Ain't got no money, and you know they go together.
Money is honey, as they say.
I'm buying time while I queue it up. Okay, so the Pride of St. Louis, Mama's Pride. This is St. Louisans know this song. My friends know this song. Here's Blue Mist on the Coral Courts Radio Hour. Now, Brad, I don't know if you've ever been in a relationship where you've been so disappointed and betrayed that when you think of the person that you were with, you can't even speak because your mind literally locks at the evil that was there. And I am certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that the person of whom I am speaking that this song reflects to me is not listening to this show. Mm-hmm. But yes, I have felt so hurt that I could not speak when I think of a particular person in mind.
And using that phrase is not typical of rock and roll lyrics at all.
No.
You know, you broke my heart, or you made me sad, or you left me when I was down. But being unable to speak as a choice for lyrics is very, very powerful.
Especially for literate people like poets who write lyrics, or, you know, writers like you, or you know, comedians like me who make a living with words.
Yeah.
To encounter something that literally renders you speechless.
Yes.
Is effing powerful, man.
Plus, the guy, and it's not just because he's from St. Louis. Most people from St. Louis who do rock and roll, I'm sure, are very talented.
You've heard of Chuck Berry?
No.
No? I'll play you something. About. You might like it.
I told you, Nadine is the song that kills me by Chuck Berry.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Yep.
Anyway, this guy has vocal chops.
Yeah,
this
man.
This guy, when he wails in a bluesy way, it jumps off the record and hits you. So I'm going to say something that's probably going to annoy people who love Southern rock and roll. This guy should have been the lead singer for the Allman Brothers.
Ooh,
this guy has the intensity, the poetic quality, and the technical prowess to have been a great lead singer for a more popular band. And God knows the Allman Brothers live at Fillmore East sold zillions of copies. They never had a good lead singer.
That's
this truth. Guy's got it, and he's also a good songwriter.
That's an excellent point. I think the musicianship in the band is pretty solid too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these guys should have been bigger. I mean, I don't know why REO Speedwagon won the lottery, but these guys should have been huge. Now, to be fair, there's a follow up song to this that when I play for myself, I will play them in tandem, and it's called "Can I Call You a Cab." And it starts out kind of smooth and bluesy. My baby woke me this morning. She told me, and you know, she says she's going to leave.
Right.
And he's like, well, if that's how you feel, then there's only one thing I got to say. And then the tempo picks up and it goes into this bit about, can I call you a cab? Can I help you pack your bags? Just get out of here.
Is it that cheerful in tone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful
here,
song.
Here, let me help you.
Yep.
Let me throw your bags down the hallway and help you.
Which I've also felt. Yeah, let me throw you down the stairs.
Yeah, that's a darkly amusing, but Blue Mist, you know, it's great blues rock, you know. And here's the thing. Blues music, it's hard to do anything new with it. It's because of its structure, because of a long history, because of the limitations of what blues is. It's hard to do anything new or anything that leaps out at you. And these guys, to their credit, have done so. And it builds. And you don't mind the extended ending of the song.
Mm-mm.
It's building on the heartache. And
it's reflective of the heartache. It absolutely is. I mean, you don't mind that phasey synthesizer in there either. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, all right, I can forgive that. But the rest of the song just grabs you by the lapels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the lyrics are, I think they're even more appropriate for heartbreak than like positively Fourth Street. You know, where you're chewing somebody out just for being shitty human beings.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is far more poetic than even what Dylan wrote.
Uh-oh, wait till he finds out. I'm going to talk to him personally tomorrow.
You know what?
No, that's not true.
Bob, you want to be on the Deep Dish Radio Show? Be my guest.
Yeah, you can have your moment. Look, you know, even the greatest of legends have songs that aren't as powerful as others. And even the most obscure groups, as we've learned from Deep Dish and Coral Courts, the groups that you guys have never heard of, that I've never heard of, or even I've never heard of. And we bounce off each other and we go, that's great. And then you investigate and maybe there's a couple other songs that get you.
Or maybe it's the Knickerbockers where they had one song that was worth a damn and the rest you can pretty much throw away.
Yeah, but for blues rock, that's right up there in the pantheon. Nicely done.
Thank you. Now, I kind of like to skip the next cut on the list.
Yes, well, editing. If you want to do that, then we're going to go to a group, Procol Harum.
Yes.
Who many people say wrote one of the greatest lyrics in the history of rock and roll music with A Whiter Shade of Pale. And you have decided that you want to play an instrumental backing track.
I do, and I'll tell you why. The lyrics to Whiter Shade of Pale are absolutely brilliant. There's no question about it. And everyone knows them. People don't always understand them. They're American Pie level subject to interpretation, right? But everybody knows one of 16 Vestal Virgins, you know, and everybody knows the lyrics. But what is overlooked by those incredible vocals and really interesting lyrics is the musicianship of the guys in Procol Harum themselves.
Yeah.
So I have stripped out the vocals.
Oh, you did this. It wasn't released.
It was actually released. Yeah. So I'm presenting the backing track. You can hear it buried deep in the mix, but this is legitimately released by Procol Harum.
Uh-huh.
For purposes of presentation, I am presenting it with the vocals stripped out.
I've never heard this prior to you turning me on to it.
So it is an amazing piece of music. You know Whiter Shade of Pale, but you need to hear it without the vocals because it is powerful. So I'm going.
It's time that those musicians get their due just for the music.
Right on, man. Well, first of all, there's nothing better than the keyboards in just about any rock and roll song, but these are I say it a lot, but it's transcendent. Here's Procol Harum. that's the track, right? That's what happens in the studio when there's fade out. I never noticed the tack hammer piano.
No, I was, as it was playing, you saw me, I don't know if you read my lips, but I went piano.
Yeah.
Like I'd never heard that
right.
in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, why is it okay for a classical composer to do variations on a theme over and over again, and for us to not hear in what is considered a classic rock song, A Whiter Shade of Pale,
yes,
all the variations of the organ line for it? Because when you listen to it without the singing, you realize he's constantly finding new ways. He's not
right.
repeating what he's doing.
Right. Each time there's a different
melody,
approach.
But it's a different approach every time through.
All ironically, allegedly based on J.S. Bach's Air on the G String, by the way.
That's right. Well, you know, we've talked about, you know, Emerson, and we've talked about, you know, other groups that
right.
have been classically influenced. And you know what? There's a reason that it attracted them, you know, in the first place. They rarely have done it over and over and over again. On the drive in here, I'm listening to the West Side Story soundtrack.
Okay.
You know, and I'm thinking America, you know, Sondheim and Bernstein and all that. And I'm thinking, why did Keith Emerson love this so much? And I realized for its time in the early 60s, it was revolutionary. Not only the quality of the dance, but to have a piece of music that's that lively saying how screwed up and how wonderful America is at the same breath. You couldn't get away with that in popular music in 1962.
In the middle of Camelot, yeah.
Yeah, in the middle of, you know, JFK's Camelot, you know. You know, I think I go back to San Juan. I know about you can get on. You know, that kind of,
right.
you know, sort of back and forth. So, you know, there's absolutely perfect sense that they would be influenced by Bach. And there were other people who also, you know, took classical music beside, you know, prog rockers like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Or
and it would twist it around.
Right. Or Procol Harum, one of the original prog rock bands. I love the instrumentalization.
Are they prog rock, really, though? That's my question to you. I always found it, I will admit, hard to categorize Procol Harum. But they didn't strike me as progressive rock music. It wasn't as complex and as that. They were kind of jazzy blues rock. They were just kind of some melding of all those things. But maybe it doesn't really matter what you call them.
The moody blues without pomposity.
You stop beating up on my moody blues.
Sorry.
I'm going so far as to say that at least a third of their music was terrific.
You know what? I'll go with that.
It doesn't sound like, you know, damning with faint praise, I know it sounds like. But it's great. But back to your impulse, which is let's hear the subtleties and the variations
right.
of what they did on Whiter Shade of Pale that you're not going to hear because the lyrics are great and the vocal is very present. And wow, you missed that.
Well, you've heard this song 100,000 times, you know, and it really just becomes a complete package. If you never hear Derivations, you never hear it live. You know, I've never seen Procol Harum live. Mm. And I would imagine most people who are familiar with Whiter Shade of Pale accept it as just this package that you presented as a song. And you never really go, oh, maybe there's a little more to it than that, because the mix is really good on the final thing. And if you strip it out and you remove it from being a wall of sound, I'm not taking away from the vocals because they're powerful, wonderful vocals, and he handles it capably, and the lyrics are fantastic. There's no question the lyrics are fantastic, but there's something just interesting about going, I never looked at it that way.
Yeah, well, how often do we talk about, okay, look, we're going to hear the a cappella version of this Beatles album, or, you know, I was a big fan of Yes's song Leave It. I think that was off of 90125.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. And when you hear it a cappella and what Trevor Rabin did, it's even more astounding. Yeah, it's great to bring in those sledgehammer, you know, echoey drums
right.
and all that stuff. But when you hear just their voices together, it's astounding. And sometimes you need to do that to appreciate all the production and work.
There are starting, I think, in the mid 90s, there was a trend to start releasing albums with stripped out tracks. Yeah. So you hear just the vocal track or just the piano track or whatever. And if you haven't heard Pet Sounds in that format, not only do you get to hear what amazing musicians the Wrecking Crew were, but the harmonies that those five or six guys put together at any given time will melt your ears. They are so, whether you love the Beach Boys or hate the Beach Boys or whatever, you can appreciate the tremendous amount of talent that went into that single album. There were rumors that Rundgren was going to make a CD-ROM of Something Anything, where you could make your own mix, and each track would have
its own. What a great idea.
It really is.
Or they should at least build software where you could play anything through it and remix it. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
It would.
Yeah.
You'd have to have the master tracks. I mean, I would love to hear just, you know, sometimes I would love to hear just Paul's track on Rubber Soul and Revolver, or just John's tracks on Rubber Soul and Revolver, just to hear what those guys were doing.
Oh, listen, you know that I'm a big Jimmy fan.
Yeah.
So, you know, and having written the book, so there was, I guess, Behind the Music, VH1, or one of those kinds of docs.
Yeah.
And so there's this guy, very humorous guy named Mike Finnegan,
okay,
who's a keyboardist. And he talks about being brought in for Rainy Day, you know.
Okay.
And he says, you know, they just said, you know, Jimmy said, hey, man, just do something like this. And you know, I didn't know I was just honored that they even asked me in, you
right.
know. And you got to hear him play the organ underneath, you know, that incredible wah-wah that Jimmy does on the song.
Right.
And then, you know, what I love about a lot of these documentaries, especially they did one on Pink Floyd too, Dark Side of the Moon, is you're at the desk.
Oh, is that the one with Alan Parsons at the desk where he's going through each individual
and,
track?
And, yeah. Here's the girls, you know?
Yeah.
Here's the backup singers that Roger Waters was kind of obscuring, and you listen to them and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know? So it goes both ways. Sometimes you want to hear just the vocals, and sometimes you just want to hear, as with Procol Harum,
right,
just the music.
Transitioning to the next cut, where there's classical influences in all kinds of rock and roll, I want to play the next cut without introducing it. I don't want to spoil
spooky.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil the presenter, the band, the artist.
Seventh caller, if you can guess the classical musician this is based on, you get a fried chicken.
I can't even top that. Here, let's go.
Now, what are the chances that anyone in the listening audience thought, oh, that's Sergio Leone from an Italian spaghetti western soundtrack?
Right. Or, yeah, Albione's Ariago in G minor, a fine classical piece that I think all Deep Dish listeners are familiar with.
Albinoni.
Albinoni.
I'll be damned.
I'll be damned.
I'll be doggone, which is another of my favorites.
I should have known that, man. My classical music knowledge has decreased tremendously.
But let's really blow their minds. Who did it?
That was the Doors.
That was not the Doors.
That was Robbie Krieger and Ray Manzarek performing a discarded track for the post-Jim Morrison collection of poetry.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'd never heard that, and I thank you for sharing it. It's not that I've never listened to Albinoni. And I certainly have listened to plenty of Doors.
Sure.
But the thing is that, I've said this before, the exposure of people who never listened to a type of music, to that kind of music by a pop group, can't be underestimated. And it makes kind of perfect sense, you know, for the Doors, because they expose people to Brecht and Weill, you know, show me the way to the next whiskey bar. And it's a great version, you know. I mean, I've listened to the, you know, original soundtracks with La Delaney and all those guys. I love Jim Morrison's version of that song. So then hopefully the listener goes, wow, you know, Bertolt Brecht, Kurt Weill, who are these guys? I don't know anything about these guys. You know, Three Penny Opera. Wow, you know, there's an intensity to that that I can really relate to, even though they were, you know, writing 40, 50 years ago.
And that's the thing about what I wanted to put together is just, you know, listen to the skill, listen to the musicianship of these guys out of their element. You know, that's why I played Whiter Shade of Pale the way that I did. That's why I played this, because, you know, these guys get a bad rap. I have heard other musicians that I respect, members of the Byrds, who have said, I don't care for the Doors because those guys can't swing. And
can't swing. That's a jazz term. You should never use that as a rock group.
Especially or a blues rock group. But for as jazzy as they were, for as tuned in as those three guys were musically to each other, the musicians in the Doors, you know, they had some chops, man.
Of course they had chops. And, you know, only Lionel Hampton or somebody like that could say, hey, man, those guys, they just don't swing. Give me a break. I mean, Jesus Christ, when did the Byrds ever investigate, you know, Bertolt Brecht or classical music? You know, they get big thumbs up for, you know, 8 Miles High. It's a classic of psychedelic music.
Sure.
But, you know, that is unacceptable. Unacceptable to me.
No,
and I'm so glad that
it.
You shared Albinoni's Adagio by these guys, and
murdered the title, but forgive me.
It's wonderful, and like I said, Tim, I had never heard it before, and
that's what I love.
You know, and the other thing is the spaghetti western thing, but also let's not forget the Doors, Spanish Caravan.
Oh, yeah,
where Robbie Krieger does some amazing flamenco style guitar.
Somewhere in here, I have a copy of Morrison Hotel signed by Robbie.
Oh, how great is that?
Yeah, he was couldn't have been nicer.
But then, you know, but with that song,
yeah,
you know, so okay, wow, you know, guitar, flamenco style picking and stuff. But then it goes into outer space and there's processing, so it's this wonderful melding.
Yep.
Whereas this is not straight ahead classical. It's the glissandos on the guitar are saying, okay, there's something for you who wants something a little electrified, but we're also going to honor the original composer. I love it. I love it.
Do too. Now, you've heard An American Prayer, right? The post after Jim died, the guys got together, put together and found tapes of Jim reading his poetry,
yeah,
and put music behind it. And I think that should be released as an instrumental album as well. I think there's a lot of good music on that. So,
yeah, I'm a big fan of people who write poetry, recite it, and then they connect with somebody who gets what they're doing and gets the feel of it and does, you know, not necessarily something very composed, but almost a punctuation. I think I talked to you before about Jack Kerouac and Zoot Sims on sax with some of Kerouac's poetry, which just takes it to a whole other level.
Everything is music, man. Speaking of taking things out of their initial context, one of my favorite bands, and I have not made a secret about it, is the Zombies, right? British invasion band that I think never really got their due. They had a grand total of three albums. Their third album, Odyssey and Oracle, I think ranks up with Sgt. Pepper and Pet Sounds as some of the greatest music ever recorded.
But they did have some big hits.
They had huge hits, no question about it. I don't think they were as prolific as, say, some of the other bands. But, you know, if the Dave Clark Five can get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with two hits, these guys should definitely get in. And one of their early hits was a song called She's Not There that I think everybody who listens to this show pretty much ought to know.
Right.
Well, post-Zombies, this was re-recorded by Rod Argent, the de facto leader of the band, and Colin Bloomstone, the vocalist for the Zombies, exclusive vocalist. And for whatever reason, it was chosen to be recorded in Italian. And I want to play the Italian version because it takes it out of the context of the song that you've heard 100,000 times. And you really hear the musicianship, you hear the power of the tonality of the lyrics, even if you can't understand the lyrics themselves, you know? And so I wanted to kind of take it out of that context. Now, I played this for you a while back and kind of, and blew your mind a little bit.
He is not exaggerating. He played it for me and I just salivated like Pavlov's dog. I went, oh my God. I mean, I've heard the German Beatles songs, and I've heard other people singing in French from English, but you guys are in for a treat. This is a tremendous, it's not a clever novelty knockoff on She's Not There. It is its own wonderful, magnificent animal.
Così triste il tuo pianto, ma lei non è qui. Tu sai capire soltanto che lei non è qui. E non ti importa se io t'amo, perché nel cuore hai solo lei. Se con gli occhi ci incontriamo, io vedo lei. Ma quello che tu mi dici, io posso capire. E ti farebbe felice, ma lei non è chi. E non ti importa se io t'amo, perché nel cuore hai solo lei. Se con gli occhi ci incontriamo, io vedo lei. E non è giusto quello che tu, ma non è giusto, mi fa soffrire me. Non l'aspettare più, non tornerà, lo sai, ma più da te. We'll be right back.
è così triste il tuo pianto, ma lei non è chi. Tu sai che pire soltanto che lei non è chi. E non ti importa se io t'amo, perché nel cuore hai solo lei. Se con gli occhi ci incontriamo, io vedo lei. Ma non è giusto quello che fai tu, ma non è giusto che far soffrire me. Non l'aspettare più, non tornerò, lo sai.
E la gente ci guarda ed amico un po'.
Ci chiamano i Monkeys, siamo meno matti di chi si crede più intelligente di noi che la pensiamo così. Comunque parliamo, non è giusto mai, c'è sempre qualcuno che ne sa più di noi.
So there's a little surprise for you.
A little surprise? You blew my mind and reconstituted it. Okay, so we had the theme to the Monkees in Italian.
In Italian, yeah.
But it's a whole different world from reconstituting, reimagining the Zombies, and she's not there. And when you first played it for me, I thought, oh, this is kind of inventive, you know, fuzz guitar and, you know, the bass line's different. Nice string. And then the flute comes in. And
right.
Then the processing, and I was just swept away. It was like, I don't know where you're taking me, but I'm following you. I'm not expecting it to sound like the English language version at all.
Yeah.
I'm glad it doesn't.
And then you juxtapose that with the Monkees theme, which is basically the original backing track, just with translated lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Same vocalist, who mm-hmm. probably spoke it phonetically.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Monkees theme in Italian exists as a result of a federal law in Italy that said any TV show that is going to be programmed, broadcast in Italy had to be 100% in Italian.
But there's nothing wrong with literally using the same tracks and then singing another language. I was fascinated as a kid when I heard the Beatles, come give me Diner Ho or whatever.
Right.
You know,
or,
I want to hold. Yeah. You know. Yeah, exactly. Those were great fun, and they harken back to when those guys, you know, played Hamburg and all that.
Sure.
And it was totally mind-blowing for us.
Of course.
But what the Zombies have done there is, and Colin's vocal...
It just completely reconstituted, which is the perfect word for the entire thing.
It
literally reimagined a hit and jazzed it up, made it really sonically super interesting.
There's a really good argument that the intensity and the emotion in his Italian vocal is actually better.
I think so. Yeah.
And what a great opportunity for people who are fans of a group to actually not only hear the music taken in a different direction, but to get that quality of emotionality in the singing.
You know, I just thought of it, that there's a few years in between the single, the English language single, and the Italian reimagination.
Yeah.
And I think it shows the quick maturation of the artists involved, you know, that they have evolved as a band, they've evolved as a creative force, they've evolved as humans, and matured as humans. And so they're able to approach a song that they did 5-6 years earlier with different eyes and literally a different language, and then create something brand new. And that's really the purpose of the Choral Courts Radio Hours, to give you something that you've never heard before, or maybe hear something that you have heard 100,000 times differently. Take it out of its context and really listen to it as the work of art that it is. And so for, you know, folks like Kem Knapsack and Brad Schreiber and any of the other guests that have been here with music, or even my music, listen to it for what it is. And
I can't thank you enough for turning me on to these musics. that I never would have been aware of, and there's just so much out there.
And vice versa, old friend. That's what I love about it. So thank you very much for all the kind words on iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, tell your friends. If you don't like it, tell us. But if you don't like it, why are you listening this far in?
No. If you don't like it, tell us, and we'll tell you off. So, but let's have a conversation about it.
Well, yeah. Post this on your social media. You know, let people know that this show is here. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much, Brad. Tell us where we can learn more about you and maybe buy some of your books.
Oh well, bradschreiber.com. That's Schreiber, like the great comedian Avery Schreiber, who I once met and told him that I was his long-lost cousin and he owed me money.
Did he give you any Doritos?
He didn't give me any money or Doritos, but it was great to meet him.
And his mustache.
Burns and Schreiber. So, yeah, you can find a number of my books there. You can find out what I'm doing next in terms of promotion or other projects on Facebook.
There you go. And me, you know where to reach me. Thanks very much for listening, folks. This is the Coral Quartz Radio Hour, a presentation of Deep Dish Radio. We'll see you next time on podcast. And have a great day. See you next time.
Bye.
I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.